The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
You smell it too, old fella? Snow. Winter's coming on. Be here before you know it. But it's time for it, I reckon.
With serious weather on the way, the legendary mountain man Preacher is ready to head home to his cabin in the Shining Mountains. But for a band of usually peaceful Arikara Indians, pilgrim hunting season is just beginning.
Good fight, fella.
Stand right there, mister. Don't move or I'll shoot.
You better point that damn thing at the ground, friend. In case you didn't notice, I just risked my own scalp to keep these Indians from taking yours. We're on the same side.
You're one of those wild mountain men. How do we know you won't try to kill us?
Against his better judgment, Preacher agrees to a rescue effort that forces him to travel hundreds of miles in the dead of winter. The wagon train he guides carries one very pregnant woman and a passel of dark secrets. And with the engine still on their trail, nerves fray and tempers flare.
My wife talks about you all the time.
What?
She's very impressed by you, Preacher. She thinks you're quite a man.
Well, I'm sure Miss Galloway's a fine woman.
And a fine-looking woman, too, don't you think?
I ain't paid that much attention.
Oh, surely you have. You're a man, after all. You couldn't help but notice an attractive woman.
I don't go around looking at other fellas' wives.
Well, she looks at you. A great deal, in fact.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that.
No. And you wouldn't even think about stealing a kiss from her, would you?
Look, goddammit, if you got something you want to say, mister, you best go ahead and just spit it out.
All right, I will. Stay away from my wife. Stop talking to her, and if you lay one hand on her, I swear I'll kill you.
You ought to be more careful who you go around threatening to kill. Folks tend to take that serious out here.
Before they reach their destination and the last of the snow melts, the pilgrims will battle the natural elements, and they'll plumb the depths of savagery necessary to survive against man's worst enemy, his own nature. Don't miss the epic adventure awaiting you in The Last Mountain Man 11, Preacher's Journey. Available soon from Graphic Audio, where the legend of the American West comes alive.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by James Konacek, Andy Clements, Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, Stephen Carpenter, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Tim Carlin, Michael Glenn, Barbara Pinellini, Kate Torrey, Erica Rose, M.B. Van Dorn, Peter Stray, Eric Messner, Karen Carbone, Nanette Savard, Scott McCormick, Tom Simpson, and Mort Shelby. The Last Gunfighter Number 5, Showdown.
Thank you.
The town is bigger.
Last time he rode through, it was no more than a wide spot in the road. About 10 years back, even though he didn't remember the name of the town. Frank saw that there was still not much to it, as he looked down at the buildings from a hill. But maybe there'd be a barbershop with a bathhouse. Hard winter was fast approaching, and Frank was out of supplies. Needed a bath, a rest, and a meal he didn't have to fix himself. He looked down at Wolf, his big cur, sitting a few yards away.
You need a good scrubbing too, Wolf.
Wolf wagged his tail without much enthusiasm at the mention of the word scrubbing. A few weeks had passed without incident since Frank had left the beguiling valley concealing the troubled twin towns of Heaven and Hell. But now, events were in motion that would forever change the life of the gunfighter known as the Drifter. They were events Frank could not alter even if he knew them. The events took place in a private men's club in New York City, a club to which only the very wealthy belonged. But an eastern wind was about to blow up a strange storm in the west, and for Frank Morgan, it would be foul weather indeed. Frank intended to head southwest when he left the communities of Heaven and Hell. Instead, he headed northwest. Why? He didn't know. He just did. He rode slowly toward the town, passing a weather-beaten sign announcing South Raven. Frank shook his head at the name.
I wonder where North Raven is.
It took Frank about a minute to ride the length of the town, passing a general store, a saloon, a leather and gun shop, a barber shop, bathhouse, undertakers all in one, a small cafe, a stage office come telegraph office, and several other stores. He finally reined up in front of the livery stable. Frank swung wearily down from the saddle. An old man walked out of the shadows of the livery and sized up Frank for a few seconds.
Howdy, boy. You look plumb tuckered out.
I am.
Come a ways, have you?
Good piece, for a fact. Did I miss the hotel coming in?
Ain't there. But there's rooms for hire over the saloon.
Where's North Raven?
You funny boy, you know that? There ain't no North Raven. Never has been. Town's named for the local doctor. He's from the south. That's how the town got its name.
What part of the south?
Alabama. Raven was a doctor in the Confederate Army. I think he was a colonel.
There were a lot of them, for a fact.
You was a rebel?
I was.
I was on the other side. Doesn't make a difference to you?
Not a bit. War's over.
We'll get along then. I hate a sore loser. You want me to take care of your horse?
And my dog. I'll stable him and feed him.
You don't think I can do that?
I don't want you kicked or bitten.
I'll sure keep that in mind. Them animals got names?
Horse and wolf.
That ain't very original.
It suits him.
I reckon so. You look sort of familiar to me, boy. You been here before?
Can't say I have, but I appreciate your calling me boy.
I'm older than dirt, boy. Everybody's younger than me.
He stared hard at Frank for a few seconds.
I've seen you afore. I know I have. It'll come to me.
Let me know when it does. Anyone in town who does laundry?
The Widder Barlow. The barber will get your stuff to her.
All right. My gear will be safe here.
Sure will. I got a room with a lock on the door.
Cafe serve good food?
Best in town.
Oh, it's the only cafe in town.
That's why it's the best.
Frank smiled and led Horse into the big barn, Wolf following along. Wolf would stay in the stall with Horse. Frank left his saddle in the storeroom and walked across the street to the barber shop. He arranged for the washerwoman to launder his trail-worn clothes, then took a long, soapy bath in a tub of hot water. He dressed in his last clean set of long-handle underwear and clean but slightly wrinkled jeans and shirt, then got a shave and a haircut. He stepped out onto the boardwalk smelling and feeling a lot better and walked over to the cafe for some lunch.
Beef stew, hot bread, and apple pie. It's all we got, but it's good and there's plenty of it.
Sounds good to me. Keep my coffee cup filled, please.
Frank ate two bowls of the very good stew and drank several cups of coffee before his hunger was appeased. He walked across the street, signed up for a room, then went into the bar for another cup of coffee and to listen to the local gossip, if any. The patrons fell silent when he entered, everyone giving him the once-over. Frank ignored them and took a table in the rear of the room.
Pot of coffee, please.
I know who you are.
Frank sipped his coffee and offered no reply to the statement.
What are you talking about, Ned?
The gunfighter who just walked in.
What gunfighter?
Frank Morgan.
Frank Morgan? Here in South Raven? You're crazy, Ned.
That's him what just walked in, Mark, sitting over yonder drinking coffee.
Frank took another sip of the strong coffee and remained silent.
Is that true, mister? Are you Frank Morgan?
He is.
Oh, my God. He's here to kill someone.
I don't think so. Seems like a right nice feller to me.
The livery man walked to the bar.
Your name come to me, Mr. Morgan. I knowed it would.
Frank lifted his coffee cup in acknowledgement.
I seen Doc Raven right after you stored your stuff. Told him about you. I reckon he'll be along any time now.
Why are you here in our town, Frank Morgan?
To spend a couple of days resting my horse, to eat a meal I didn't cook, and to get my clothes washed. Is that all right with you, men?
Sure suits me.
You're not looking to kill no one.
No.
By God, it is you. I thought old Bob was seeing things.
Told you it was him, Doc. Dr. Raven, Mr. Morgan.
Frank nodded at the man.
Do I know you?
No, but I've seen your picture dozens of times and read a couple of books about you.
Don't believe everything you read. According to those books, I killed about 1,000 men, been wounded 50 times, been in gunfights all over the world, and been received in royal courts and knighted by kings and queens.
And you're still a young man.
I'm 45, Doc, and feel every year of it.
Dr. Raven walked over and sat down at the table with Frank.
Coffee.
The doctor looked at Frank.
You're very relaxed, Mr. Morgan.
Name is Frank, Doc. And why shouldn't I be relaxed?
You're not aware of what's been planned back east?
No. Something that concerns me?
I would certainly say so. It's been in the works for, I'd guess, 6 months at least. Probably longer than that. You're about to become the prey in what some are calling the ultimate hunt.
Frank's eyes narrowed for a few seconds. The only betrayal of his emotions.
You want to explain that? And how you found out about it?
A friend of mine in New York City. We went to college and medical school together. Graduated just in time to serve on opposing sides during the Northern aggression against the South. He wrote me months ago asking if I knew you. Of course, I told him I didn't. In his next letter, which was not long in coming, he told me about a group of wealthy sportsmen who each put up thousands of dollars for this hunt. To be blunt, the money goes to the man who kills you.
The authorities haven't stepped in to stop this nonsense?
Obviously not. The so-called sportsmen are on their way west as we speak.
West is a big place, Doc. How do they propose to find me?
I understand the group hired private detectives to do just that.
Frank warmed up his coffee and sugared it.
Doc, this is the damnedest thing I ever heard of. Hell, it's illegal.
Of course it is. But you're a known gunfighter. In the minds of many people, the world would be a better place without you in it.
Oh, this is gonna bring out every two-bit gunslinger west of the Mississippi.
Well, we have a couple of gunfighters right here in this community. They'll be in town later on today, you can bet on that.
You know that for sure.
It's Friday, Frank. They always come in for drinks on Friday.
Ranch hands?
They occasionally hire on to some ranch when they're not stealing cattle or horses.
I'm surprised anyone will hire them.
Oh, they're careful not to steal from any of the ranches in this area. But they've already heard about the other money on your head.
Sounds like everyone in the West has heard of that. But no one's collected it yet.
Obviously. But don't sell these two men short, Frank. I'm told they're fast. And good shots to boot.
Young?
Mid-20s.
The worst age. They're full of themselves. Think they're 10 feet tall and bulletproof.
That's an interesting way of putting it, but accurate, I would say.
Doc, if there's an almighty who grants wishes, I'd ask to live out the rest of my years in peace, without another gunfight. That's the simple truth.
Doc Raven stared into Frank's pale eyes for a few seconds. He took in the dark brown hair, peppered with gray, the thick wrists and big hands.
I believe that, Frank. But it doesn't change anything.
No, it doesn't, Doc. You have a marshal here?
No, we had one, but he died several years ago. Not much goes on here, Frank. It's a very peaceful town.
If it's gonna stay peaceful, I better move on, Doc.
Nonsense. You're welcome to stay here as long as you like.
The mayor and the town council might have something to say about that.
I'm the mayor, Frank, and we don't have a town council.
Oh, interesting. How about a bank?
A small one, located in the stage office.
Do you own it, too?
As a matter of fact, I do. Would you like to open an account?
Not really. I have ample funds with me.
Enjoy your stay in South Raven, Frank. I've got to see about a patient. We'll visit again soon.
I'm sure.
The doctor walked out of the saloon and into the crisp fall air of southern Idaho. Frank poured another cup of coffee and rolled a cigarette. Old Bob, the liveryman, came over to Frank's table, a beer mug in his hand.
The doc tell you about the Olson boys?
The horse thieves?
That's them. Hey, cousins, and worthless. But both of them pretty good with a pistol.
Maybe I can avoid them.
Doubtful, Mr. Morgan. M2's looking for a reputation.
A man turned away from the front window of the saloon.
Here comes Brooks and Martin. They're reining up now. Oh, Lordy. Letters gonna fly for sure.
The Olson boys?
That's them.
The front door opened and two young men swaggered in, both of them wearing tied-down pistols. Bob pushed his chair to one side, giving Frank a clear field of fire. Frank sipped his coffee and waited. He looked at the two young men, all full of confidence and false toughness, like so many before them. Bullies, for the most part, and to Frank, unimpressive. Frank could tell by the way they walked. Both were primed and cocked for trouble. Brooks and Martin strolled over to the bar, got whiskey, then turned and gave the patrons a once-over. Both their gazes settled on Frank.
You somebody important?
You speaking to me?
Yeah. Who are you?
A man enjoying a pot of good coffee. Does that bother you? Not that it's any of your business.
The pair of trouble hunters stiffened.
We might decide to make it our business.
Why?
Huh?
Frank's eyes fixed on the pair.
I said why?
Brooks and Martin exchanged glances.
'Cause we wants to know who you is, that's why.
The name is Frank. And I assure you, any pleasure in this meeting is all yours. Now leave me alone.
Frank took an immediate dislike to Brooks and Martin. He didn't like bullies, a dislike that grew over the years.
You got a real smart-alecky mouth, you know that?
You have my totally insincere apologies.
The bartender smiled at that.
What? I don't think I like you.
Free country. Like or dislike whoever you choose. Now, if you have nothing else to contribute to this small exchange, shut up.
Huh?
I said shut up.
Who the hell do you think you is?
A man rapidly losing patience with a couple of ignorant loudmouths.
What?
You think you're somebody special or something?
I'll tell you who he is. He's Frank Morgan.
Brooks and Martin stood silent for a few seconds as that statement sank in. Brooks was the first to speak.
You lie. That ain't Frank Morgan. Can't be.
Well, it damn sure is him.
Size, what would Frank Morgan be doing in a dump like South Raven?
Resting, having a cup of coffee, and minding my own business. Why don't you two shut the hell up, try minding your own business, and leave me alone?
The cousins looked at one another. Martin opened and closed his mouth a couple of times.
You can't talk to me like that, mister, whoever you are. Why, I called men out for less than that.
Yeah. Me too.
Go away. I didn't come here looking for trouble.
Well, now, that's some better. Now you're being smart, mister. Nobody with any sense wants to tangle with us.
I'm sure. Now go away.
Maybe we don't want to go away. Maybe we want to stay and have a drink.
Then damn it, drink. But do it quietly.
What if we want to talk? That allowed?
Frank slowly pushed back his chair and stood up. He was growing tired of the Olson boys and wanted nothing more than to get away from the pair before the situation deteriorated into gunplay. Martin and Brooks tensed, their hands dropping close to the butts of their guns. Frank kept his hand away from his .45.
I'll be leaving now.
Maybe we want you to stay and talk to us. I mean, you're such a famous person and all that.
Yeah, it ain't every day we get to talk to someone like you. Maybe you could show us how fast you are, Mr. Has-Been. How about it?
I really don't think you boys want me to do that.
Oh, but we do, Mr. Famous Gunfighter.
As a matter of fact, we insist on it.
Frank stepped away from the table, his hand dropping to the butt of his pistol. From long experience, he knew the situation was very close to a showdown. He didn't like it, didn't want it, but there it was.
All right, boys, here it is. I'm gonna walk out that front door. You wanna slap iron, do it. Do it right now, or shut your damn mouths.
Brooks and Martin suddenly found the situation without humor. They were facing a man never beaten in a hook-and-draw confrontation. The pair exchanged quick glances.
Hey, easy now, Mr. Morgan. We's only funnin' with you.
Frank offered no reply as he began walking toward the front of the saloon.
But we'll be around.
So will I.
Frank opened the door, shoved open the bat wings, and stepped out onto the boardwalk.
Good thing he left. I'd hate to have to put lead in him.
Yeah, him being kind of a legend and all that. You know he slowed down to nothing with age and all.
Brooks and Martin, faces flushed with anger and frustration, turned away to face the bar.
Assholes.
See who's laughing when Morgan's dead in the street.
You boys best settle down and enjoy life. Because if you push Frank Morgan again, there'll be guns going off with the lead flying in your direction.
We ain't scared of that has-been.
Then you're a couple of damn young fools.
Outside, Frank paused for a moment on the boardwalk, long enough to roll a smoke and light it. The chilly wind blew around him unnoticed while Frank was deep in thought. A group of Eastern businessmen were going to hire men, or had already hired men, to hunt him for sport? Incredible. Frank had heard of this happening once before, but never knew if it was fact or rumor.
I guess it's true.
He turned and walked down the boardwalk.
What am I? Some sort of beast of prey.
Frank bought some food at the cafe for Wolf, went back to the livery and fed him, making sure he had plenty of water. Stepping to the door of the livery, he stood and watched as two men rode slowly into town and reined up in front of the saloon. They both stepped stiffly from the saddle and stood for a moment looking around them. Frank did not recognize them, but he knew the type. Gun handlers. Both of them wore tied down guns and acted wary, carefully looking over the area before moving away from their horses and stepping up onto the boardwalk. Frank stayed in the shadows of the livery and watched the pair. They stood for a moment on the boardwalk, visually checking all around them before stepping into the saloon.
Well, I'm not going to stand out in the cold because two strangers rode into town.
He headed for the saloon, intending to go to his room and relax, perhaps read some from a book he had picked up from a traveling peddler. Frank was not an educated man, in the sense of formal education, but he was well-read and always carried a couple of books in his saddlebags. He wanted to avoid trouble, but damned if he was going to sleep in the barn when a warm room was bought and paid for. The liveryman stepped out just as Frank approached the side door.
Gun slicks in there, Mr. Morgan.
Bob jerked his thumb toward the bat wings.
I saw them. You know them?
Never seen them before, but I know what they are.
They're trouble hunters, for a fact. You hear a name?
No. Ain't said nothing to nobody, except in the bartender. They ordered coffee and asked about some place to eat.
I imagine the Olsen boys will have something to say before long.
You can bet your bankroll on that. Them boys got mouths that will put an alligator's snout to shame.
Frank smiled at that.
You gonna ride out, Mr. Morgan?
Nah, I probably should. But I want to find out more about this so-called sporting game those idiots back east dreamed up.
You think them two gunslicks that rode in is a part of it?
I don't know, but I'm gonna find out.
I got to see about my animals. Don't start no shooting till I get back. Ain't often we get any excitement in this town. I don't want to miss nothing.
I'll do my best, Bob.
Frank stepped inside the saloon and paused for a moment, sizing things up. The Olsen cousins were sitting at a table across the room. The other patrons scattered around the big room. The two gun handlers were at the bar, drinking coffee. All conversation ceased when Frank entered, all eyes turning to watch him. Frank walked to the end of the bar.
Beer, please.
His eyes turned to the two gun hands.
Howdy, boys.
Both men nodded their heads in greeting.
I thought the men in here were joking when they told us Frank Morgan was in town.
In person. You boys looking for me?
Nope.
But there's about 50 people who are looking for you.
So I heard. How close are they?
Hard to say. Damn detectives are all over the West, snooping and asking questions, trying to pinpoint you.
Big money goes to the man who locates you, Morgan.
You boys interested in that money?
We could use it, but it'd be tainted as far as I'm concerned. I've hired my gun for a lot of reasons, but this here hunting a man for sport is stupid. I ain't taking no part in it.
Me neither. But there's a little nothing town about 50 miles east of here that's filling up with bounty hunters. I expect they'll be in this area in a week.
Was I you, Morgan, I'd head west, for California maybe. Get the hell out of this area. Your life ain't worth spit around here.
Never was much for running.
Us neither. But man, there's a whole damn mob after you.
How much money on my head?
Thousands of dollars? I don't rightly know the exact figure. We've heard everything from $10,000 to $50,000.
And that'll draw the trash out of the garbage pile, along with the ants and the flies and the maggots.
Frank nodded his head in agreement.
You boys want a drink? On me?
Appreciate it. Right after this coffee. It's a tad chilly outside. We're warming our innards some.
Give them what they want. Put it on my tab.
If I knew who was paying the money for your dead stinking butt and how to collect it, I'd brace you right now, Morgan.
That's whiskey talking, boy. Shut your mouth.
Don't tell me what to do, Pops. And mind your own business.
Suit yourself. It's your funeral.
Frank leaned against the bar and sipped his beer in silence.
That's damn sure gonna be somebody's funeral. It ain't gonna be ours.
The two gunslicks glanced at Frank and smiled knowingly. Frank acknowledged the smile with an arched eyebrow.
Cup of coffee. Getting colder outside, Frank.
How's your patient?
Complaining, which is a good sign.
Doc glanced at the clock behind the bar.
Stage is due any time now.
Expecting somebody?
No, just some newspapers from back east. This time tomorrow, we'll only be a couple of months behind times.
Late for a stage, isn't it?
It's a regular stop. They'll spend the night here. And the driver always has more news. The stage layover is always a big event.
Daily stop?
Twice a week. Sometimes three times a week. Supply wagons roll in twice a month.
You have a telegraph here, don't you?
When the wires are up. Why, you want to send a message?
Nothing urgent. Just asking.
Yeah, maybe he wants to call in some help. Like maybe the army.
Doc Raven turned to look at the young man.
You have a big mouth, Brooks, along with your big ears. Why don't you mind your own business?
Why do you go to hell, Doc?
Because, son, I think they're preparing your room before they're getting to mine down there.
Brooks stood up, his right hand dropping to his side, close to the butt of his pistol.
The Doc ain't armed, Brooks. You know it.
Morgan is.
Frank turned to face the young man.
Why are you pushing me, boy?
I ain't no boy, Morgan. And I'll tell you something else. I don't like you at all. What do you think about that?
I think, boy, I've had all your damn mouth I intend to take. Now either drag iron or shut the hell up. It's your choice.
Stage is coming, and it's full of passengers!
The tense moment was shattered when all the bar patrons began rushing toward the front door. One of the men bumped into Brooks Olsen. Brooks was wound up tight as a drumhead and lost his balance.
Son of a bitch!
He put out a hand to grab the edge of the table. His eyes were wide, suspecting Frank would take that time to shoot him. Frank leaned against the bar.
There'll be another day, Morgan.
Take your time, boy. You could have a long life ahead of you.
Hell with you!
Frank turned his back to the angry young man and signaled the barkeep to bring him a cup of coffee. Brooks and Martin stomped out of the saloon.
Stage arrival is a big event in this town.
You bet.
The barkeep poured Frank a cup of coffee.
Although it usually don't amount to a hill of beans when it comes to people getting off. Newspaper's what the folks want. News is mighty scarce around here.
There's two stages this run, boys. Both of them full of folks. Get some rooms ready, Phil.
Phil?
That's me. Help yourself to the coffee, boys. I got to get some rooms ready for the crowd.
And we'll look after the bar, Phil.
Trusting person.
Small town, Frank. Full of good people.
For a while, Doc. But they'll get tired of me pretty fast.
Nonsense.
You'll see. I've been through it many times. If it's one thing I know, it's human nature.
We'll see. Frank, where is your home?
The West, Doc. wherever I choose to hang my hat.
I hear you're a man of some means.
I'm not going to miss any meals because of a lack of funds.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
You hustling cash for your bank, Doc?
Hell yes.
The entrance filled up with passengers from the two stages. 6 men and 4 women trooped into the saloon. The passengers were all dressed to the nines, all but one of the men in suits and stiff collars, the women in fancy traveling dresses.
Easterners, most of them.
City folks, for sure.
Bernard Harrison stormed in.
I am exhausted. I insist upon a hot bath immediately. Where is the proprietor of this wretched hovel?
Yeah, bringing in all of your damn traveling bags. Sort it out, folks. I got to bring in all them trunks now.
Nora Green didn't appreciate the level of service.
Well, hospitality is very thin here.
What the hell is a wretched hovel? Is that something good?
You there.
A man waggled a finger at Frank.
Get us something to drink and be quick about it.
Go sit on a cactus.
You obviously don't realize to whom you are speaking.
Nope, and I don't care.
What an impudent fellow.
Doc Raven smiled at the exchange. He turned to face the weary travelers.
I'm Dr. Raven. Welcome to South Raven. But I must warn you, this is not New York City. There are no doormen or valets here.
That much is quite obvious. You're Dr. Raven, and the town is South Raven. The village is named after you?
Yes.
How wonderful. Perhaps you could tell us where we register for our rooms?
Through that door right over there. Just sign your names to the register and grab a key.
And tote your own luggage.
You, sir, are a most disagreeable fellow.
There's a saying out here, folks. You stomp your own snakes and saddle your own horses.
How quaint. I'm sure I will treasure that rather pithy remark forever.
Frank started to tell him where he could shove his reply, then decided against it. He turned his back to the Easterners and sipped his coffee.
There are bathing facilities in the rooms?
No, sorry. You can have a bath behind the barber shop. If you don't want to share the water, you'd better tell the barber now so he can get ready.
Share the water? How primitive.
Save some water for me. I gotta bathe my dog.
Bathe your dog?
He don't have many fleas. They'll be dead before you strip off anyways.
A civilization has not yet reached this outpost.
Do you have savage red Indians here?
Not many, but you don't have to worry about Indians. Most of them don't like white women. Y'all smell funny to them.
I beg your pardon.
I've never seen so much crap in all my life.
Phil carried in a heavy trunk and dumped it on the floor.
It's gonna take me an hour to tote all this junk in. You men come out here and give me a hand.
The one male passenger, not dressed as fancy as the others, sat at a table and said nothing, but his eyes never left Frank. Frank singled him out immediately. He was not wearing a pistol that could be seen. Frank didn't know the man, but he knew the type. The two gunslicks at the bar took their drinks and moved to a table. Conversation waned as the men went outside to help with the luggage. The women waited impatiently. The trunks began piling up in front of the saloon as the men hefted them into the large drinking area.
We can't get them through the door to the hotel lobby. This is the worst hostel I've ever experienced.
With the rudest counter-help. What counter-help?
Where's the newspapers and magazines?
I can't imagine these people actually read. It's so primitive here.
Do you suppose we could have something to drink while we're waiting?
Coffee or water?
Coffee would be wonderful. 2 lumps and a splash.
2 lumps and a splash of what?
Sugar and cream.
The woman looked at Frank, a strange glint in her eyes.
The man actually has some knowledge of genteel behavior, ladies. How curious.
Quite, Margaret. You there?
The woman turned to Frank. Frank turned away from the bar.
What do you want, lady?
The traveler at the table sat up.
Don't speak to Mrs. Dunbar in that tone of voice.
Frank ignored him and continued looking at Mrs. Dunbar.
You seem to possess some level of education. Rudimentary, I'm sure. What do you do for a living? Are you a cowboy?
No.
Frank turned back to his coffee. This entire gaggle of Easterners irritated him with their superior attitude.
Well, are you going to answer my question?
I'm independently wealthy.
The truth was, he was extremely wealthy. Frank owned railroad stock, holdings in several producing gold mines, and many, many shares in other companies, thanks to his ex-wife, Vivian. Years ago, her father drove Frank away with false accusations. After he died, she assumed control of his vast business holdings. Before Vivian Browning's murder, she set Frank up for life, as well as their son, Conrad, who didn't have a whole lot of use for Frank.
Yes, you certainly look wealthy.
Do you have a name?
Frank.
Frank what?
Frank'll do.
You're not very friendly, Frank.
The man who warned Frank about addressing Mrs. Dunbar abruptly stood up.
That's Frank Morgan.
Frank stood quietly at the bar, but he turned slightly, his right hand dropping to his side, not far from the butt of his .45 Peacemaker.
Is that true? Are you Frank Morgan?
Yeah.
My God. Hugh, there he is in person.
I see him, Colette.
Hugh carefully set the trunk on the floor. Frank cut his eyes to the man. Nothing extraordinary about him. Just another Easterner, all duded up.
You want me to take him now, Mr. Knox?
No, sonny. That would spoil the game for everyone.
Frank ignored Knox and cut his eyes to Sonny.
Just where are you figuring to take me, Sonny?
Anywhere and anytime I choose, Morgan.
And how you planning to do that, Sonny? Fists or guns?
Frank moved his hand to the metal coffee pot Phil placed on the bar. Frank poured his own coffee and guessed the pot was about half full.
Sonny.
I'll show you people this so-called tough-as-nails gunfighter is nothing but a washed-up has-been.
Sonny took several steps toward Frank, and with one fluid movement, Frank closed his hand around the handle of the coffee pot, took one step, and smacked Sonny in the center of the forehead with the heavy pot. Hot coffee splattered as the pot impacted against Sonny's head with a dull clunking sound, and Sonny stretched out on the floor, out cold. Frank put the dented pot back on the bar.
Damn shame to waste good coffee like that. Coffee's easier to clean up than blood.
My word!
It's gonna rain like a bull pissing on a flat rock.
Bob looked at the women.
Excuse my language, ladies. I forgot you was here.
Clouds have been building all day.
I suspect the storm is gonna be a bad one.
How do you know that?
Because it's building from the east. Anytime a storm blows in here from that direction, it's a bad one.
The stage driver walked in, carrying the last of the luggage.
Oh, it's starting to rain.
The driver glanced at Sonny.
What happened to him?
He got tired and decided to take a nap.
Well, somebody step over him and get me a drink. I got me a hunch we're all gonna get to know each other right well if this storm is as bad as it looks.
What do you mean?
We're sometimes cut off here after a bad storm. Sometimes for a couple of weeks. The pass is closed due to the rock slides and bridges wash out. While your rooms are being readied, why don't we introduce ourselves and have a drink? You people might be here for several days.
There is a man lying unconscious and perhaps badly hurt on the floor, and nothing is being done to help him.
Oh, he's all right. But he'll have a headache when he wakes up. What is your name, madam?
Nora Green. That is my husband.
She pointed at one of the other men.
Edmund.
Sonny put a hand to his head. He made no attempt to rise from the barroom floor. Another of the Easterners turned to Doc.
I'm John Garver. My wife decided at the last minute not to accompany us on this western adventure.
The manhunt, you mean?
Well, yes.
Are you one of the men who put up money to hunt me like some sort of rabid animal?
Yes.
What kind of people are you? I'm not a criminal. I'm not wanted by any court. What kind of mind considers a manhunt sport?
Sonny managed to sit up on the floor. There was a trickle of blood and a swelling knot in the center of his forehead. His glazed eyes found Frank.
You bastard, I'll kill you!
I doubt it. Now just sit there and shut up.
He looked at the group of men and women and pointed to Sonny.
Is this dude in your employ?
He is our bodyguard. He is one of the finest bodyguards in all of New York City.
Well, if your fine bodyguard isn't careful, He's gonna be a dead bodyguard. This isn't New York City, folks. Out here, the rules of conduct are somewhat different.
I should have you arrested. I believe I shall summon a police officer right now.
The stage driver looked up from his mug of beer.
I think there's a deputy, about 100 miles east of here. If the rain was to stop right now, and the telegraph wires ain't down, and, passes ain't closed by slides, or the bridges ain't washed out, I figure he'd get here in about a week or so.
That is incredible.
Welcome to Idaho territory.
Gonna be a bad one. Good thing the supply wagons just run. We're damn sure gonna get cut off for a spell.
This is dreadful.
Not as dreadful as it's gonna be when some of your gunfighters catch up with me.
The next morning, Doc Raven shared conversation with Frank over breakfast.
It's uncommonly warm. I've seen it like this a couple of times over the years, both times during a heavy rain. The slides are going to be bad. Bet on it.
The telegrapher walked in, waved at the waitress, and took a seat at the table with Frank and Doc Raven.
Wires just went down. That means the slides have started.
We're cut off?
We sure are. 30 miles to the east and 30 miles to the west. The last wire I received told of about a dozen or so wagons on the way from the east. No way of knowing whether they made it through Wild Horse Pass.
Wild Horse Pass is where the slides start?
Not necessarily, but it's the worst place coming from the east. If they made it past that point, they'll probably be rolling in here late today or tomorrow.
Supply wagons?
Maybe one or two of them. The others are probably settlers. No way of knowing till they roll in.
I didn't stick to the roads, and I followed old trails over the divide. I don't know much about what lies west of here. How about that way?
The way west on the main road is worse. If any travelers made it to the old trading post about 25 miles west of here, they can get through to South Raven. If not, they're stuck.
So there is a possibility this town is going to fill up with men looking to gun me down.
Could be. Things might get real interesting around here.
Interesting is not the word I would use, Doc.
You best sharpen your tools, Doc. Odds are good you're gonna get real busy digging out lead.
Not if I pull out right now.
Are you considering that?
Oh, not really. It was just a thought.
It would be a tough pull over the mountains in this weather. And dangerous. No matter which direction you're headed.
Any more dangerous than me staying here and possibly facing several dozen guns?
Good point. So what are you gonna do?
I'm gonna wait here until the rain eases up, then pull out.
It'll be several days at least. Then maybe a week or more after the rain stops before the road is cleared. Believe me, we've been through this before.
I'm sure you have. Say, back about 10 years ago, there was a little town north of here, along the Payette. Is it still there?
The buildings are. The last of the people pulled out, 5 years ago, I guess. Red Rock was the name of the place.
Yeah, that's it. Stopped there for supplies. Gold mining town, I recall.
Gold mining fiasco was what it was. There never was any gold there, except what was salted in a couple of caves by that thieving ne'er-do-well who bilked a lot of people out of their money.
Whatever happened to him?
Some folks down in Utah hanged him a few years ago.
Don't tell me he tried to pull something over on the Mormons.
Yes, and he didn't make it. They were onto him like a weevil to cotton. Strung him up.
Probably deserved it.
10 times over.
Wagons and riders coming in from the east.
The three men stepped outside to the boardwalk to watch the arrival of the travelers.
Those sure are some fancy wagons. I never seen anything like them.
Made to order for the rich to travel in comfort and style.
More easterners. Suppose those are more the men who put up the money for the hunt, Frank?
Probably. And the outriders are hired bodyguards.
You know any of them?
No.
Tough looking bunch.
Wonder where they're gonna stay. There ain't no more rooms to be had at the saloon.
Who cares?
Frank leaned against the support post and rolled a smoke as the fancy wagons rolled slowly past. The men on horseback all gave Frank hard looks. Frank returned the looks.
They're sure giving you the once-over.
They know who I am. I suspect they've been thoroughly briefed. I imagine it won't be long before some of the good citizens of the town will approach me, or you, asking that I please leave town.
There might be a few who will ask, but they will be in the minority.
Wait until the streets get bloody.
The telegrapher walked back to his small office as the wagons continued to roll slowly through the town. One of the earlier arrivals from the east stepped onto the boardwalk across the street in front of the saloon and waved to a passing wagon.
Maxwell Crawford!
The wagon lurched to a stop.
Maxwell Industries. I don't believe it.
You know him?
We went to school together back east. Both of us sparked the same girl for a time. Wilma Lewis. I heard they got married right after the war.
My, my. This might turn out to be quite a reunion for you.
Maxwell was a pacifist, or so he claimed at the time. I heard he bought his way out of serving in the war.
A lot of men did.
More in the north than in the south.
Frank did not reply. He was not interested in the politics of the war of the northern aggression. The war was over, and the country continued the work of healing the many lingering wounds.
Bernard, I'm glad you made it. Where is Margaret?
Maxwell Crawford stepped up onto the boardwalk, and the two men shook hands. Their conversation did not carry across the street to Doc Raven and Frank. Frank watched as a lone rider stepped his horse up the street.
Now there is a man I do know.
Well?
Riding into town. His name is Dolan. Damn, I thought he was dead. Rumor was he died in a range war.
Gunfighter?
One of the best.
Better than you?
I don't know. He's quick, I'll give him that.
Raven studied the man as he drew closer.
You two are about the same age, I'd guess.
Just about.
Dolan reined up in front of the cafe and sat his saddle, staring at Frank for a moment.
Morgan, it's been a few years.
About 10 years, Dolan. I heard you finally caught some lead and got planted.
It was close, for sure. But I fooled the Reaper again.
I'll leave you two to reminisce.
Doc Raven walked away after a curt nod to Dolan.
Friend of yours, Morgan?
The town's doctor and namesake, Raven.
Interesting name. Wonder if it's really his.
Frank shrugged.
That'll do. You know how it is out here, Dolan.
For a fact I do. I plumb forgot the name my parents gave me. You do know we're cut off here, Morgan.
So I'm told, with a bunch of rich men from back east and their hoity-toity women.
They all put up money for this hunt, Morgan. And yet here you are, standing around like nothing important's taking place.
How much money is on my head, Dolan?
I ain't sure. Thousands of dollars, I'm told. The last man standing after you hit the ground is the winner, so I'm told.
So it's not just me that'll have to watch his back.
What do you mean, Morgan?
You said it yourself, Dolan. Last man standing.
Yeah, that do put a different light on things, don't it?
I'd say so.
I reckon I better start cleaning the herd some.
Why don't you do that?
I will in due time, Morgan. You ain't planning on cutting out, are you?
I'm gonna stick around. I wouldn't miss this show for the world.
You're a strange man, Morgan. Mighty strange. See ya!
Morgan nodded and watched as the man lifted the reins and rode away. Footsteps sounded on the boardwalk to his left.
Turn around and face me, drifter. I got dollar signs in my eyes.
Frank turned slowly. The man, only a few steps away, was a stranger, but he had the hard-bitten stamp of a hired gun on his face and in his eyes.
The hunt begin already?
Frank held his right hand near the butt of his peacemaker.
I ain't been told otherwise, so I reckon so.
You got any kin?
Huh? What business is it of yourn whether I do or not?
Someone's gonna have to be notified of your death, stranger.
My death? What the hell are you talking about?
You pull on me, you're a dead man.
The stranger hesitated.
You damn sure yourself, ain't you, drifter?
Sure I am. Now turn around and walk away from me and live.
Nah, I done made my brags. So grab iron, drifter.
After you.
Frank met the man's eyes.
It's your show.
Across the street, the occupants of the newly arrived wagons climbed out and stood silent, watching the life and death standoff between the two men on the boardwalk. Maxwell Crawford turned to his friend, Bernard Harrison.
So that's Frank Morgan.
That's him. A rather unimposing chap, isn't he?
Certainly seems that way from here. Who is that lout confronting him?
I have no idea.
Hi-ho, chums!
Horace Vanderhoot walked up with his wife, Nellie.
Horace!
What a dismal little village. I am told there is no hotel.
Only a few rooms above the saloon. But I just learned of a boarding house on a side street.
Aaron and Ethel Steele approached the group.
We anticipated few accommodations, which is why we endeavor to have our wagons equipped as lavishly as was humanly possible.
Is there a place to bathe in this depressing mud hole?
A bathhouse behind the barbershop. It's primitive, but functional. You must bring your own soap, however.
Aaron pointed to Frank and the challenger.
Are those two fellows going to shoot one another?
I rather believe the moment is past. From here, it seems Frank Morgan is unwilling to draw his pistol.
Oh, well, poo. I wanted to see a Wild West shootout.
Oh, you will, my dear. Before this is over, we'll see several, I'm sure.
Frank's challenger lost his grip. His shoulders sagged.
All right, Drifter. You win this round. There's gonna be another day.
There usually is. But like the Indians say, any day is a good day to die.
The stranger turned and walked away. Frank stepped off the boardwalk and into what was now a light drizzle. The sky seemed to clear a bit, though distant clouds foretold more heavy rain. Frank walked over to the growing crowd of Easterners and stopped in the street in front of Maxwell Crawford. He stood for a moment, staring at the rich Yankee.
You one of the men who put up money to hunt me?
There are several rifles trained on you right now, Morgan. Accost me and you're dead in the street.
Too damn yellow to do your own fighting, are you?
I'll have you know I'm quite a good boxer, Morgan. I dare say you never fought with your fists, so if I were you, I'd not push too hard.
Frank stared at the man for a moment. As Frank laughed, Maxwell Crawford grew angry.
Here now, you dolt! Stop that!
Frank took off his hat and wiped his eyes with the back of his hand, his laughter gradually fading to a chuckle.
I needed that. Tough man. Thanks for brightening my day.
Needed that? What do you mean by that, you misbegotten cretin?
A good laugh. That's what I mean. Thanks for it.
You were laughing at me? That tough man remark was fraught with sarcasm. I demand an apology.
Well, you idiot bastard, which is what I believe you meant to call me, you just take your demand and stick it where the sun don't shine.
Oh, my stars and garters, how crude!
Stars and garters, that's a good one.
Several locals on the boardwalk couldn't help but laugh.
Stop that! Stop that! Vulgarity is not in the least amusing.
I should thrash you.
In your dreams, Cream Puff.
Cream Puff? Cream... That does it. Prepare to defend yourself, you ignorant oaf.
I'll be your second.
That's fair, Bernard. After all, you were fraternity brothers.
Done.
Maxwell stepped back and took off his coat, handing it to his wife, Wilma.
Hold this, dear. I shan't be long.
Frank stood a few feet in front of the rich industrialist, waiting for the man to make the first aggressive move.
Do try not to roll about in the mud, dear. It's dreadful out here. Ugh.
Across the street, Doc Raven reappeared, standing under a boardwalk awning, watching and listening to the crowd.
Maxwell, you're just as arrogant as you were in school. Now, thank heaven, you're about to get your ass whipped.
He looked long at Wilma.
Still a lovely woman.
Are you ready to take your thrashing, Morgan?
Maxwell did a couple of stretching exercises. He held his arms up, hands clenched into fists. His left arm was stretched out in front of him, and his right fist held close to his chin.
If you insist on this nonsense, come on.
Maxwell waggled his right fist under Frank's nose in the hopes of drawing a swing from Frank, thus enabling him to uncork a left. Frank didn't take the bait. He stood with his fists half raised, a faint smile on his lips. Frank, a veteran of dozens of brawls, kick, bite, and gouge types, also knew a bit about the manly art of boxing. Maxwell Crawford looked to be in good physical shape, probably worked out in some sort of gym. But he was about to tangle with a man who was strong as an ox and didn't have an ounce of backup in him. Maxwell tried a sharp, quick right, and Frank moved his head ever so slightly, and the right whistled by him. Maxwell's eyes narrowed. He was beginning to realize he was facing a man who knew something about boxing. Then he knew it for a fact when Frank's gloved right fist suddenly smacked Crawford in the mouth. Maxwell shook his head and backed up, spitting away blood from busted lips.
Knock his block off, Maxwell!
Maxwell did not reply. He did not take his eyes off Frank, knowing now he was facing a man who could box and punch like a pile driver. Maxwell spat away more blood and tried a left. Frank blocked it easily. More wagons pulled in, stopping in the middle of the muddy and rutted street so their passengers could watch the fight. Another half dozen or so wagons were just entering the town, followed by a dozen or so mounted men. The riders rode on around the wagons and reined up across the street and down a few stores from the fight. Maxwell slipped a left through that jarred Frank. The man could punch. Frank would sure give him that.
Huzzah!
Huzzah! Starting!
Maxwell's friends roared their approval at his scoring a wicked blow. But their roars of approval turned to sudden silence. Frank blasted Maxwell with a left and a right. The blows knocked Maxwell back several steps. He lost his balance and sat down on the edge of the boardwalk, blood seeping from his nose. Frank would normally step in while his aggressor was addled and finish the fight. But this time, he didn't. Frank simply took a couple of paces back and waited for the Easterner to regain his senses and stand up.
I say, Aaron, this man does have some sporting blood in him. Quite fair of you, gunfighter.
Yes, he does, Bernard. Really white of you, old boy.
Frank cut his eyes at the man and said nothing. But he was thinking, what a pack of nincompoops.
Time for a 1 minute rest period.
Good God.
What's that all about?
New rules, a rest period every few minutes.
Well, ain't that just spiffy. Frank, why don't you just shoot the fella and be done with it?
Here now, there'll be none of that.
Relax. This is fists until someone pulls a gun.
Maxwell stood up and jabbed at the air a couple of times.
I'm ready. Round two coming up.
Well, come on, then. I got things to do.
Are you in that big a hurry for a thrashing?
Maxwell, just get your fists up and fight, will you? And shut that damn big mouth.
I'm really going to whip you proper for that uncalled-for remark.
Bring your ass on, rich boy.
Maxwell flushed and rushed in, ready to pummel Frank to the ground. Frank promptly knocked him on his butt in the mud. Maxwell floundered around for half a minute, his lips bloody from the blow, before he slowly crawled to his feet. He stood for a moment in the cold drizzle, glaring at Frank, the mud dripping off him.
What's the matter, rich boy? You ready to admit you're facing the better man and quit?
You insolent cretin! How dare you speak to me in such a tone of voice?
Well, come on then, pale face.
Fight.
Pale face!
That's you, Maxie baby.
Damn you!
Maxwell took a run at Frank. Frank sidestepped, stuck out a boot, and tripped the man. Maxwell went sprawling face first into the mud. Maxwell slowly got to his knees and tried to wipe the mud from his face. All he succeeded in doing was spreading it around. The man was covered with mud, from his shoes to his face, all mixed in with a bit of horse crap. Someone in the crowd of locals began laughing, and soon it became infectious. Maxwell's anger grew the louder the crowd laughed.
Damn you! Stop laughing at me!
You ready to quit now?
Certainly not!
Well, come on, man. Let's get this over with.
Maxwell struggled to get to his feet. He almost made it before he lost his balance and fell face first into the muddy street. That set the crowd off again. Peals of laughter ripped the cool, drizzly air. Children joined their parents along the boardwalk, and their pointing and giggling seemed to infuriate Maxwell.
You brats! Incorrigible ragamuffins!
Fall down again! You're a funny man!
No!
Maxwell flailed his arms as he got to his knees. Frank walked over just as Maxwell was getting to his feet. Maxwell took a wild swing at Frank, and Frank sidestepped. Maxwell could not check his forward momentum. He again went face first into the mud and horse crap of the street.
Hell, it's over.
Frank turned to walk away.
You stop right where you are! I will dictate the conclusion of this match!
You gotta be joking. You can't even stand up.
Maxwell slowly and carefully rose to his feet and lifted his fists.
Now, fight, you oaf!
Frank took one long look at the man. Maxwell's eyes rolled back in his head. He stretched out as he hit the mud and did not move.
Now it's over.
Frank slopped across the muddy street, just making it to the other side and stepping up under the boardwalk awning as the skies opened up and torrents of rain poured down. Maxwell's friends dragged him unceremoniously out of the street by the feet and hoisted him up onto the boardwalk.
Somebody get a pitcher of water.
Oh, my poopsie! My poor, poor poopsie!
Poopsie? Did she say poopsie?
Ha ha, she did! Darn, she did!
Poopsie! Ain't that pitiful!